Blog Talk Radio.
At 12 o'clock, it's Talking Sports with Mike T. I'm your host, Mike Tramontozzi, here with you for the next half hour. Jordan Lauterbach from WCWP Sports will join us in the half hour at about 12:10. Go over some sports, see what Jordan's got going on in his mind. Interesting, a lot of things to talk about here. Obviously, you've got MLB, baseball heading to the All-Star break. I would say if you're looking at teams in terms of surprises, you would have to start with the Pittsburgh Pirates, who played pretty well last year and stumbled in the second half of the year. You have to look at the Washington Nationals, who I don't know if anybody thought would be the number one team in the National League. Obviously, the Mets, 46-40 in second place, a lot better than a lot of people expected. I think the White Sox are surprising some people, 47-38. Obviously, everyone just assumed that was Detroit's division to lose. The American League East is very injured, and the Yankees are taking advantage of it. Baltimore starting to slow down. Tampa Bay, now they might not have Longoria for the next 2 weeks until we get into September. The Angels have been lights out since the beginning of the year, and they're tied with Baltimore for the wild, they're actually in the wild card lead, and I believe Baltimore is the second wild card team. Tampa Bay, a half game out of that, and this is where you're going to see that two wild card team format. Instead of Baltimore being, two and a half games back, now they're tied in terms of being that second team. Tampa Bay now just a half game out. Cleveland a half out. Detroit 1.5. Oakland 2.5. Boston 2.5. Toronto 2.5. Even Kansas City at 7.5. It's a long shot, but it is a definite advantage. You look in the National League, Cincinnati and Atlanta tied. San Francisco, the Mets, and St. Louis a half game back, and then you got Arizona 4 back, Miami 5 back, Milwaukee 6 back, and everyone else is double figures. You've also got NBA free agency going on. Obviously, now the big thing is the moratorium is lifted on Wednesday, and teams can sign anybody. You got Steve Nash going to the Lakers, which came as a surprise on July 4th. Everyone just assumed he was going to go to the Knicks, and then as soon as the Lakers... you look at Steve Nash going to the Lakers, obviously a little bit of a surprise. Then you got Kidd going to the Knicks to be a backup and mentor Jeremy Lin, which I like. I think it's a good move. Now the Knicks have moved their sights to Marcus Camby, who would be a ideal backup to Tyson Chandler, give them some ability to rest Chandler a little bit more than they did last year and still not lose much defensively. That might even gain a little bit offensively. Camby can hit the jump shot. So I actually like it. It depends, coming down to who the Knicks can get in a sign and trade, and who they can't. If they can get Kidd in a sign and trade, then they can just sign Camby outright. If they don't get Camby through outright, they can get him through a sign and trade, and then sign Kidd outright. So the Knicks have some moves here, in terms of being able to get the two of them. I think it helps the team. I don't think that, they're going to need some shooting guard help, which makes J.R. Smith coming back all the more important. And I highly doubt they trade or match the offer for Landry Fields. I don't know who is paying them. Who would want to pay Landry Fields $20 million over 3 years? I like Landry Fields, and he's a good player, but I'm not paying him $20 million, especially $8 million the final year. Not happening. Not happening. But outside of that, not a lot of moves. I like what Phoenix has done. If they can get Eric Gordon, they sign Beasley. They have Morris. They sign Dragic back. So I'm real interested to see what if New Orleans matches the offer for Gordon. And if I'm Eric Gordon and I don't want to be in New Orleans, when I have that meeting with Dell Demps and Mondi Williams, I throw a complete and utter hissy fit. I make it impossible for them to want to match it. Just make it absolutely terrible. Because if you look at that team now, if they get they sign Beasley and they sign Dragic, that's two spots. You have Kendall Marshall coming off the bench. You got Marcus Morris there, who's a good young player. Gortat's a very underrated center. You know, Channing Frye's still there, can shoot the three. Jared Dudley is a very good, you know, 2-3 kind of hybrid who can now come off the bench if they get Gordon, or start at the two if they don't get Gordon. They've kind of rebuilt on the fly in a way. And it's kind of interesting, and I'm kind of excited and like the way that they're going about it. You know, they moved on from Nash, but they do get three first-round picks for Steve Nash, which is going to help them continue to rebuild. And it's definitely something that, you know, you like to see if you're a Suns fan. It's just not total rebuilding. It's not total, you know, to stash and burn, in a way. They've kind of rebuilt on the fly. Beasley gives them a guy that can score 20 points. He's not going to have to worry about splitting playing time with Kevin Love or Derek Williams like he did in Minnesota. If they get Gordon, that gives them another go-to scoring option. Obviously, Dragic has showed that he can score if he has to. And he fits into that mold of being an up-tempo guard that Alvin Gentry wants to play with. And, you know, Gordon does the same thing. So does Beasley. They can get out and run. You know, if Phoenix can get Gordon, they can be a sleeper team. I mean, they were very close last year with nobody to being a playoff team. Now they're going to have, if they get Gordon, two guys in Beasley and Gordon that can score 20 points. Dragic can get you, you know, 17 a game. It's an interesting summer if you're a Phoenix fan. Obviously, then you get down to Dwight Howard, and where's Dwight Howard going? You hear a lot of talk about it being the Nets. If I'm the Nets, I understand that you want it because you need to make splashes going into Brooklyn. But I'm not sure, because you're going to have to take back a bad contract, either, you know, Vince Carter or Jason Richardson or Hedo Turkoglu, one of the two. And that's another 3 years. Hedo Turkoglu's got 3 years left on his deal. That would mean if you get him and Dwight Howard, you would then have $85 million attached to seven guys, which is a lot of money to be a tax-paying team, to where you then have to fill the rest of your roster out with vet minimum guys and your mini mid-level exception. You know, it's one thing to go for Ray Allen to go for the mini mid-level exception to a team like Miami, who needs help at shooting and can go small with Allen at the two and Dwayne Wade at the one, or go big and then go ultra small with, you know, LeBron at the four, Wade at the three, Chalmers at the one, Wade and Ray Allen at the two. So I understand, but Joe Johnson's going to play 35 minutes a game. Deron Williams is going to play almost 40 minutes a game. Jared Wallace, whoever plays power forward, and Dwight Howard, there's not room. You know, you're not only going to have to take less money if you're a free agent to go to Brooklyn, you're going to have to play and you're going to have to almost take less money and minutes. And, you know, outside of someone like a Michael Redd, is that really something that's going to happen? I mean, look, a 40-year-old Jason Kidd took $3 million from the Knicks over 3 years. So I'm not sure unless there's actually players out there that all they care about is winning and don't care if they, you know, it's one thing for a 40-year-old Jason Kidd to say, I'm not interested about, you know, I don't worry about coming off the bench. You know, I'm not 25 anymore. It's another thing for a 32-year-old, you know, 34-year-old Ray Allen to do it when Ray Allen still thinks he's got 2 years left on him. So, you know, it's something that I, it's something that, you're going to have to look at as they go forward. But right now we're going to bring in Jordan Lauterbach, who I'm sure has been extremely surprised and excited by the New York Mets first half. What's up, Jordan?
Hey, Mike. How are you doing? It's good to be with you again.
I would agree. I would agree. And what's interesting is the last time we were on 2 weeks ago with the NBA draft mock lottery with Mr. Saldano, the background movie of the show was Major League. Once again, Major League is on. I like the way symmetry that this is showing.
Yeah, I mean a little bit of baseball talk with a baseball movie. Did you see Center Stage Charlie Sheen on Friday night?
I didn't see it Friday night, but I did see it last night. I thought it was great. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
I thought it was really good. I enjoyed some of his really out there jokes were really funny.
I liked it a lot. I love watching Michael Caine interview people because it's kind of awkward. So, but no, this was a good one.
Yeah, I like when he was like, I like it towards the end where he was like, oh, you're such a great star, big star. And Charlie Sheen's like, hold on, how about this guy? Yeah, how about this guy, everybody? And they all gave him like a standing ovation. And Michael Caine looked like he was like the happiest person in the world.
Oh, my God, Charlie Sheen.
Charlie loves me. I did enjoy, and I told this to Mike DeJoy. We were watching it. Not together, but we actually both had it on. We were talking. There was the one part where he talked about moving to L.A., where, you know, his dad, Martin Sheen, got some sort of job. It brought him out to California, and he was out there, and he's like, oh, I got to move everybody out here. And he said, coincidentally, my brother Emilio, he got mugged the day before. And I just imagine, like, little, like, 10-year-old Emilio Estevez getting mugged in New York City. And it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, Emilio's probably still rolling in that Mighty Ducks 2 cash. So, you know, he's got no worries when you have a franchise as, you know, as timeless as the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, he's not rolling in Mighty Ducks 1 money anymore. He's just rolling in the Mighty Ducks 2.
Yeah, he's moved on. He's moved on. Mighty Ducks 3 money, that contract is weird. That doesn't kick in until 2025.
Exactly. Your thoughts on the Mets in the first half? Obviously, I think if anybody told them they'd be 6 games over 500 and in second place at the All-Star break, I would assume you'd sign up for it. But they've really had a chance to be even better. You know, the last two series, they let at least 2 games go against the Phillies, at least Saturday, what was it, Sunday and Monday, and then the 4th of July was the Philly series. And then the series against the Cubs, you know, they really weren't great either. So they've going into these two series, they really had to have a chance to have been even better than they were now.
Absolutely. And to your first point, you're absolutely right. I mean, I thought this was going to be a year where I was having to talk myself into watching the Mets, and it's been the opposite. It's to the point where they don't play till Friday and I'm upset. I never thought that would be the case. Terry Collins has done a fantastic job with the injuries that they've had to some key pieces, just being able to plug people in. And look, it helps that the division is not that good. And the truth of the matter is, it's not. The division is not that good. But Yeah, this team is just so fun to watch. They have so much fight. They have so much just, you know, indelible qualities that, you know, the word team of destiny gets thrown around in sports so much, but if you look at the players basically besides David Wright that have carried this team, they're pretty much guys that if you had said in February that these were going to be your key pieces, you A, would have laughed, and B, would have predicted something between 45 and 50 wins. I mean, that's how, you know, almost remarkable this season has been. That being said, I was on the air Friday on WCWP on the Sportwire, and one of my main pleas at the end of the show was, please, for goodness sakes, sweep the Cubs. Well, not only did they not sweep the Cubs, but they lost 2 out of 3, and they were destroyed yesterday at Citi Field. Now, Mike, going into Friday, this was a Cubs team that had won 12 games on the road. It's after July 4th, and they've won 12 games away from Wrigley. I mean, it gets to the point where it's not acceptable. I mean, they've lost 4 out of 6 in 2 weeks to the Chicago Cubs. How does that happen? But what's kind of remarkable is they're still very much in the NL East race. They're still very much in that second wild card, first wild card race. And this is a team that's lost 4 out of 6 to the Cubs in the last 2 weeks. So even with that, it's been, you know, a very good first half, very fun first half. Basically, what has to happen now, though, is, you know, the Cubs was kind of a great way to go into the second half in that. That's one of the keys. You've got to beat these bad teams. They were swept by Houston earlier in the year. That can happen if they're going to make any sort of a playoff run. They can't lose to teams that, you know, you can count their road wins on both hands plus 2 going into a series. So that's got to change. But you do love. I mean, there's no other way but to love what you've seen.
It's an interesting group of players. You've got David Wright, who's, I think, finally healthy. Maybe the moving into the fences just relieved a sense of, you know, not having to hit a bomb every time. And he's come around back to what he was in, you know, 07 and 08, where he was, you know, a .330 hitter with 35 homers.
06 was his best year, I believe, and he's on a pace to be better. This will be, unless something happens injury-wise or he just falls off the face of the earth, this will be the best year of his career.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing lights out. He's getting big hits. I don't know which of yours, I don't know, obviously Dickey's a pretty big story in terms of where he's come from, but I think the two young kids that they've, specifically Nieuwenhuis and Valdez being, have come up. Obviously, you've had other guys come in as well, but I think those two specifically have given them a jolt. I think they really like the ability to put Nieuwenhuis in center field and bat him first or second. And Valdez being, I think, is going to have to start pushing one of the two for more playing time because he's getting big hits when he gets to play.
And I think he will. I mean, Jordy Valdespin's first home run was a game winner against Jonathan Papelbon against the Phillies in early May. And that was kind of a precursor or a great start to his Major League Baseball chapter. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I think at this point, I'd rather have Jordy Valdespin in there over some of the guys they have been playing at that position. Kirk Nieuwenhuis, I love. He's cooled down a little bit, but he's fun to watch. He's good in center field. He's got a good glove. The story of the first half is obviously Dickey. It's got to be, for all the circumstances, to be 12-1. And look, the All-Star Game starter, I don't care. I'm not... a lot of Met fans on Twitter today are screaming, Tony La Russa's on the take and all
What's
that.
What's he on the take to? He's just a weird guy who somehow gets to manage the All-Star game and is taking it way too seriously.
Well, when you're
Plus
out
he's got
of
a
the
really
game.
Plus, he's got a weird head of hair.
When you're out of the game and, you have 6-7 months to just think about this one All-Star game. And this is going to be very interesting because we haven't seen an All-Star game managed by anyone who was retired before, or not in my memory at least. And it's going to be very interesting to see just how insanely serious and comically serious Tony La Russa is tomorrow night, because, can't you just see him, having mound conversations in an All-Star game?
Yeah, I don't... What uniform... Is he going to wear a Cardinals uniform? Is he going to wear, a suit? I would imagine... it would be if he wore, an Adidas tracksuit, a blue Adidas tracksuit, completely neutral colors, and, a generic baseball hat.
I think he should just wear a bathrobe. Because La Russa's just sitting in his underwear in his bathroom, envisioning scenarios.
He's going to take way too seriously. I could see, double switches. You could see, hit and runs.
Well, he's telling the pitcher to hit Pujols. I can tell you that much.
I think he's got sunglasses too.
Yeah, I guess he is. Dave Duncan going to be the pitching coach? I mean, that's
They should have given it to. They should have either given it to Reneke in Milwaukee since he was in the NLCS. Or they should have given it to Davey Johnson and his group since he's got the best record in the National League at the All-Star break.
That doesn't bother me. I actually think this is a cool kind of thing.
Weird.
It's never happened before. Yeah, I've heard that. But just because it's never happened before doesn't mean, we deserved it under the rules. I mean, it's the National League manager in the prior World Series. I mean, there's no rule that says... And you also have to have a job. I mean, that might be, if La Russa goes nuts and gets, thrown out, which I think he should get thrown out, that would be hysterical. And, do one of his funky lineup things, bat the pitcher second. And just totally do everything that he has always wanted to do, but even he was too scared to do. Just experiment with stuff. Oh, it'll be, I'm not going to watch a second of it. I'm not an All-Star game guy in any sport.
No.
To me, I watch baseball every night of the season. To me, this is kind of like my baseball vacation, time to catch up on other things, and I'll be right back there Friday. But, I'm not going to – even the home run derby tonight, that's boring because, it's guys hitting home runs. It's not anything new. It's not surprising that they're hitting home runs in batting practice.
Yeah, I'm not excited by... plus, it's not like the NBA All-Star Weekend where you have five events where it's literally, for fans, it feels like it's an all-day thing or an all-night thing
the
where you can justify. It's the Home Run Derby. That's it. The celebrity softball game was yesterday. The Futures game was yesterday. You know, why can't they have the Futures game at like 1 o'clock today, have the softball game after the Home Run Derby? I don't understand why they – and then it – you. And you don't even have the best, you know, stars in the game. You know, remember back in the day with the Home Run Derby used to be Bonds against Griffey and Maguire and Sosa and, you know, Canseco and, you know, those. That was when the Home Run Derby was great. Now it's like...
As a kid, I loved it, but now it's just like, yeah, they're hitting home runs in batting practice. They kind of do that every day.
You know, the last one that was great was Hamilton at Yankee Stadium because they were just absolute bombs, and there were legit chances where he was going to hit one, you know, out of the stadium onto the subway tracks.
That was cool. The Maguire one, I think, was that Fenway in 99?
Yeah.
That was cool.
And then Sosa went nuts the next year in Atlanta. Remember he had like 18 or something?
Yeah. So, but I mean, I may watch it because I may, you know, go to a friend's house tonight, you know, and there's nothing else on really. But I think I'd rather watch 3 hours of Family Guy on TBS, to be honest with you.
Have you seen Ted yet?
I saw Ted the first night it came out. I loved it.
It was really good. I saw it with DeJoy. He wasn't a fan of it, and I could see why not, because if you're not a fan of Family Guy, or if you're tired of that Family Guy type of humor, you might wane on Ted, because it's kind of the same stuff, considering it's McFarlane. But
it's exactly the same stuff.
I enjoyed it.
It was
a very funny movie.
I love Family Guy, and I love Seth MacFarlane, so I love this movie.
Yeah, it was very good. Real quickly before I let you go, we got a couple minutes left. Hugh Douglas was on SportsCenter this morning, I saw, and they were going through the teams, the best team in each division that has the best chance to unseat the division winner from the year before. And Hugh Douglas picked the Jets to the astonishment and almost anger of the Lindsay Zarniak, who was the host, almost to the anger of her. She was like, "Oh, come on, are you serious?" And Hugh tried to defend himself. I don't know how he defended it. He said, "All Tebow does is win football games." And he said, "Their defense is number five in the league."
I agree with him, but I agree with him for a different reason. I agree with him because I don't think it's the Bills. I don't think it's the Dolphins. So if we're going process of elimination.
So you're not a fan of Buffalo? You don't think Buffalo? I think Buffalo's improved themselves a lot in the draft and in free agency. I mean, the worst part of their defense last year was their front seven, and to get Anderson and Mario Williams really makes it a formidable defense. And if they can get, you know, consistency from Fitzpatrick. And
that's my question, though. I don't have, as much as people question Sanchez / Tebow / you know, I guess me or
San Tebow.
Who's ever playing quarterback now? You know, I don't see, if you're gonna question Sanchez, I don't see how you cannot question Fitzpatrick.
I agree. I think it's a definite issue for the Bills, but I also think that they've taken steps to close the gap on New England. And I think the gap with the Jets was already pretty close because both of those games, except you know the one in New York was close because it came down to the final drive. The one in Buffalo was weird because both teams had like seven turnovers.
Yeah, that was an ugly game.
But I think that the gap is closed on the Jets, and I think, you know, New England's never unbeatable. So, but
I agree. I agree. Well, they're pretty unbeatable in the regular season if you think about their last couple of years. But I agree with you. I still tend to think the Jets are a little bit better than the Bills at this point. But definitely it would be between those two because the Dolphins are going to be, you know, awful again.
Yeah, I think the Dolphins are going to be pretty bad, but I think they're going to be bad not because of they're going to underachieve. I think it's going to be a, you know, they're slowly moving towards Tannehill and they don't want to start him.
Yeah, because I don't think Tannehill's a guy you could throw in week one and expect to be even serviceable. I think he's a guy you got to kind of hold his hand a little bit. And by saying they're going to be bad, it doesn't necessarily mean they're not, you know, going in the correct direction, because I do think the Tannehill pick, although I question, you know, how slam dunk a pick that was in terms of how good Tannehill's going to be, I just don't know. I do think they're going in the right direction, but I don't think the fruits of those dividends, to combine two phrases, will show this year, and there's gonna have to be a little patience in South Florida, and hopefully the Jets could take two, because you know that'll happen. Week 8 or whatever, 13-10 Dolphins will be crying.
Usually, yeah, but it doesn't matter where it is. It's one of the two. It's either in Miami,
yep,
or in New York. It doesn't matter where it is. You know, last year you had
middle of the winter team that played in Miami, rookie quarterback.
They'll be two and eight. They'll start Tannehill because they're 2-8, and he'll come in. His first game will be against the Jets. He'll go like 13 for 21 for 190 yards, but he'll have two touchdowns and no picks. But they'll allow like Reggie Bush to run for like 150 yards.
Yep, that's how it goes.
Including like a backbreaking like 12-yard run on 3rd and 8 in the fourth quarter.
Or 3 special teams touchdowns, because we know that's never happened with him.
Yeah, Ted Ginn will show up just for the heck of it. He won't even.
Ted Ginn still gives me nightmares. My Kenneth Westhoff.
Which is interesting, because I read somewhere with an interview with Steve Weatherford that he has the newspaper clip from Weatherford that says, like, you know, Steve just wasn't good enough to be our punter, or whatever the quote was, has it attached to his locker so he sees it every day. It's nothing like riling up a opposing team's punter after you cut him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mike Westhoff, nothing but class.
All right, Jordan, I'm going to let you go on that note. Enjoy the All-Star break. Recharge your batteries for the second half, and we'll see. We'll talk to you, I'm sure, before training camp starts. Notre Dame, only a couple of weeks away, Jordan. You excited?
They're expecting 30,000 people today. Not today, September 1st. I read that today.
For what? The blue? Is that the? What is that? What is that?
The Blue and Gold game is the spring game. The game in Ireland against Navy on September 1st.
Aha! I didn't know. They're playing the opener in Ireland.
8 a.m. on September 1st, Mike.
Interesting. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a NBC?
Alarm.
Is it an NBC
Wake
game?
Wake up with the Irish. I actually don't know what it is yet.
If it is, they're just going to leave a crew over there from the Olympics and take a boat over. Listen,
yeah,
just hang out in Ireland for another 6 weeks.
They
Not even
will,
cause
you, know.
You figure the Olympics are what, a month? They start in 2 weeks and they're what, like 4 weeks long, right?
Yeah, probably 3 or 4 weeks. So
then by that point, you're in the middle of it's if it's September, you're going to have to send, if it's an NBC Notre Dame home game, you're going to have to send a crew over there anyway. I bet you they're going to leave. I'm sure they're using their Notre Dame crew for some part of the Olympics. They may just send them right over to Ireland anyway.
Yeah, no one likes Tom Hammond anyway. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's an extra 2 weeks of not worrying about Tom Hammond.
Yeah, just wandering around the NBC office. Where's the next horse race, guys?
Do you ever think they get excited that final Notre Dame home game, and then they know we don't have to worry about Tom Hammond until the Kentucky Derby?
Where's the Santa Anita, guys?
All right, Jordan, I'll talk to you later.
All right, see you, Mike.
That was Jordan Ladderback of WCWP. I'd like to thank him for coming on. I'd like to thank all you guys for listening. We're out of time, so we'll, on that note, say adios and see you again next week.